Welcome to WOW 2007, the podcast. You're about to listen to Bernadine Porter's keynote address.
Okay. So, I find that this thing they call passion or enthusiasm, or I can talk faster than lickety-split, gives people altitude sickness. So, your goal today is to have one big idea from what we have, and I think that's plenty for any hour. The rest of the time, you're welcome to snooze, read, browse, check your Blackberries, whatever other things charm you. But I just want to give you this warning that says we're going to fly high, wide, and big and look at the big picture of this conversation. Funds are being attacked now, not because we haven't done good things, but because people don't get what it is and what they will lose if they don't keep funding. And our conversations today are not, have we done incredible things? But what are the incredible things? Do we need any more ideas and any more stuff? Or do we need to pause for just a little bit and say, how do we harvest those good ideas for everyone, the ones that are really, really worth our time and dime? And if I could give you a gazillion dollars today, you might think your issues are totally solved, but it doesn't attack the issue of the most precious thing we have with our kids today, and that's time. There is only so much time, no matter what money we pour into our schools. And that means we want to be reflecting and thinking out of all the things we could do and might do with technology or otherwise, what are the things that are going to give them the maximum resources to live in that world? That's our mission, always has been. Only it's more complex now than it ever was because of how things are moving. So I know that teachers are in these conversations, and schools are in these conversations, and technology is in these conversations. And we're talking and talking. This is a good place to be starting. Somewhere the strategic planning has to be about strategic doing. And what I know from working with organizational design is 20% of what we do gets us 80% of our results. The rest of the 80% nudges us around. So part of the reflection is to be continuing around keeping those sort of urgent and important things to be on the front burners. And I had a group that made buttons that says, I'm part of the 20%. And in fact, it only takes 20% of your organization in terms of people to be focused and on purpose to shift everyone else in your buildings. You don't have to drag them one by one across the river, folks. What a relief. But focusing on purpose is not we do technology. That's not focus. We buy stuff. That's not focus. I'm integrating is not focus. So I don't know what the 20% is that out of all the things you could do with your technology that you would laser and be there. But today I want to bring you a couple of big ideas. It says, we have an incredible story about us. In fact, I run digital storytelling camps in the summer to help train teachers to be designers of information with multimedia and to tell the story of how they've made a difference for kids. It is time to lift up the stories of what we do and quit letting the news media tell people what we don't do. Because we are very busy and we are very intent on what we do with our kids. So as much as that is true, I'll just put a little fun blurb because you just don't come to a tech conference without doing a little of this. How many of you have heard that the future is coming? Every minute of the day, it is coming. And yet people seem to go back to sleep and they go back to school and they say, well, let's buy smart boards. Now we're in the future. And it's like, how did we get into the future with a smart board? It's like, I don't understand what changed and what's different and how that made a difference. What does that conversation look like? So I'm just going to blip through here just a little bit and saying, do you know what this doodah is? Would you like to take a guess? And some of you may have seen this already because you be the people who are on top of a lot of new things. And we'll get up another view and saying, what is this thing? And if you follow the World Future Society, which is my number one professional recommendation to you today, is to join the World Future Society and to start having some classes in futury instead of just history. But they really give you the trends and things, and most of what exists is going to be coming at us today already exists in labs. Artificial gills that can be implanted so that you can breathe naturally underwater. We have the capacity to look forward to my generation, and I've been teaching for a while, working for a while, to easily live to 120 and 150 with good health and pizzazz. And they expect our high school kids to live to the age of 400. Now let's say they're wrong and it's only 300. or they're really, really wrong and it's only 250. We got things to be thinking about where we're going, and the World Future Society brings these trends and these conversations to the people who are part of that. So going on with this doodah, you might start be getting some guesses, or not, or just be amused about how it unfolds, but it turns out to be the capacity of a pen to be a computer, because we create a virtual keyboard on the table anywhere that we're at, and we are ready, good to go. So the whole concept of us working at could kids have their own laptops is like, I'm not saying they shouldn't have their own laptops, but they ain't going to be hanging around for us to be deciding that. We have technologies coming faster than fast at prices that kids can afford, and they can have access without everyone dialoguing about can they have access and can they blog and will we let them out on that site. They're not even going to use our networks, folks. They're just going to skip right over your thinking and where you're living and go into their world. And these are doodads that are coming past it. If you were at NECC last year, this is Negroponte's conversation about the $100 computer that they're developing for the third world. And it is battery powered, and it's internet ready, and it doesn't need electricity. And if they can do that, they can do a whole bunch of things that are coming at us for kids to be able to have, people everywhere having access. The 1 billionth user on the internet just logged on this last month, a young person in Singapore. I don't know how they kept track of that, but, you know, it's big out there. Here's another one I thought was really quite amazing. Have you seen the printable technologies? There's a metallic conductive ink in there. This is the $10 phone, and it's really paper that's printed out with this metallic ink that allows us to have that electrical connection. And what I didn't look at is the fact that there's a $15 computer that's coming out that's just printable. It's metallic conductive ink is what that technology is. And we have all these wearable technologies coming, kind of like the Dick Tracy watch, right? Ear cuffs, smart watches, programmable tattoos. Again, if you've got that metallic ink, you're saying we're not that far away from just having our doodad printed on it. Now, I don't know how they're going to update it, you know, once they get there. This is one of the ones that I thought was amusing. This is actually quite old in technology at MIT. But these are tennis shoes. And you do know that between you and me there is not emptiness. And you would know that if I had on really heavy perfume or if I was a smoker. Pretty soon from here to there you would be getting a little bit of me. Well, this is an energy zone, and we're surrounded by it. We have cameras that can take pictures of those auras and talk to you about what your colors are. And you don't have to say auras mean anything or not, but I'm just saying there's stuff in this field. Well, these are shoes that put data in your energy field. And in fact, Keith, you and I haven't, I feel like I know you, your name everywhere. So let's just say Keith had his tennis shoes on and my tennis shoes on, and we have just exchanged data fields. Like little radio signals and the, you know, things that are in our computers where you can intentionally send information back and forth to each other. Now, what you put in that field will probably be a big conversation. My niece was pretty excited. She was in Japan, and they had these little love mates. And they were just little things like this that you would program the kind of person you're meeting. And by the way, I'm single, so I'm working on that still. But I would say I would want this person who laughed a lot and was this and this and this. And then I would just wear it around. And when our fields intersect, it would go, he's here, he's somewhere. Now, this only works if there's more than one person wearing a doodah. You know, if I'm the only one walking around in the mountains, it's not going to be really helpful to be finding that person. But you're talking about the capacity to use data in very interesting ways. And of course, every time something like that comes, you've got, it could be used for evil and it could be used for good. And that's just who we are as human beings in terms of the challenges. But along with this wearable stuff is a Times 2006 award. This is a shirt called the Hug Shirt. It's Bluetooth ready. And now, Keith, you're married, is that correct? Okay, that's good, because my thing didn't go off. But it would be possible for Keith to meet me and think I'm quite charming, and he would send me one of these shirts, and through Bluetooth, he could give me hugs whenever he was thinking about me through the day. This is a hug shirt, something you can buy. It's Time 2006 fabrics, and we got fabrics that are now going to be sensitive to the weather, so it'll keep you warm or cool. You won't have to, like, take your sweaters on and off. Hey, we're going to have a lot of fun. And how are these things coming about? Because people are ramping up their imaginations. And that is a number one seller in the marketplace today, is imaginations. And not because Disney thinks it's cool. Here's another little wearable thing. It's a contact lens that you put on the eye, and you can access information and have it be clear when you're not accessing information. So you're not going to have to look down at your doodads to see this stuff. You will just voice activate. I want to look up teddy bears or dinosaurs or what the WOW conference is about and check that program again, and you will get full field vision. And because industry is having a problem that by the time they train their people to do the production line, the production line has changed. So it's, we used to be able to send people out and get them trained, then they would come back and we could have them be working 6 to 8 to 9 months. Those of you in vocational ed know that today what they have are goggles in which you have real-time training delivered in the moment, because they can keep changing the training from day to day of what you need to do. So people are being guided in real time instead of go learn, come back and do it. Now, having said all this, it is really fun to have doodads. I'm also going to say we have reached a place in which we can only have so much thrills by this, because the real conversation is, what's going on with the headwear, not the hardware? We will continue to get, any conference you go, new things that plug in, new things to buy. In fact, here's one of my more exciting charmers. It's a $100 doodah from Target. It's a video camera, that's all that it does, and it just turns on and it tapes so you can do interviews. But here's the thing that I love, no cords, no cables, just plugs into your USB port and you're ready to download and move away. Now, we're getting these for, we're launching an AP class this summer for AP teachers to be inventing what 21st century thinking looks like with 21st century tools. So rather than train them on the stuff, we have a task in which we're going to ask people to take a dramatic perspective of some person in literature or history or science or math. They get to be that person, and they're going to interview each other on what that person thinks about our immigration issues here. What would they do? What would they recommend? What are their surprises? They're going to interview each other with a camera. So we're not going to train the camera. We're just going to use it for a think test. And then we're going to go out on the network and use a program called iSpot, E-Y-E-S-P-O-T, which is a social networking tool. And everyone will be downloading their interviews. And from there, the individuals are going to create a point-counterpoint radio show. And they get to choose from all of the interviews, not just the one that they did. Now, what we did is take this tool, which of course everybody's going to love. It's very charming, it's very easy to use, and it's not that expensive. We have three-year-olds doing marvelous things with these things. And we're going to say it's not going to be about the tool, it's going to be modeling what you might do with it as a task that you could bend and push around and take back to the classroom. That is about getting our work focused on what we want to do with it, not can we buy it, and can we inventory it, can we keep it working, and can they use it, but what do you want them to use it for? And that was the discussion of the IT last night, is to work our way off of using this stuff and doing that. Now, with all those things coming in, our dialogue is business as usual or not. And I would love to see you create a wiki that says, what is the big idea that you have that you've seen in this conference, the one or two things that if you took it back and made it really happen, that you could change the culture and intellectual work and what's possible for kids. What does that look like? And I don't know if it's business as usual or not, but there's this thing called school that we've been dragging around for a lot of years, and I just want to give you a little humorous look at it. In fact, it's so real that it is humorous, and those of you who are over 25 will probably know this person called Father Guido. Well, that was fun. Okay, I'm just going to go back and see why we didn't have that clip. Okay, stress reducer, oh well. Father Guido talked about the five-minute university and how what he thinks we should do is instead of teaching all this stuff that you're just going to forget about anyway, we're going to only teach the stuff that you remember 5 years after you leave the university. So I'll give you the couple examples he has. For example, in foreign language, they only learn cómo está muy bien. Why? Because after 2 or 3 years of Spanish, that's about all you're going to remember. For business, they're just going to learn buy it for less and sell it for more. That's all they're going to remember. So he has little quips like that that are pretty funny. And then at the end, he says he has another idea. He's going to build a little university for a law school. You got another minute? Now, it's kind of interesting to look at that because we grew up in a place in which we imagined information to be very stable and contained, and we would know exactly what Bernadine or anybody would need to know to be a mechanic, a doctor, an engineer, a teacher, you know, a business owner. And we would just divide that all up all the way down until we knew that there needed to be exactly 6 minutes a day in kindergarten and 9 minutes a day in language arts for math in third grade. We had it all mathematically organized. And we can talk about the Father Guido School and how amusing it is, but one of the things I'd like you to do is, in your mind's eye, look at the students that you see in your schools and in the classrooms, and notice how much joy is in their eyes and faces. Because joy is an essential ingredient to being a good worker and a good learner. Csikszentmihalyi has the word flow and becoming adult. And they're saying that if that emotional engagement is not there, there is less learning that comes in and less learning that stays. So we can keep covering all that stuff as fast as lickety-split as we want. We can hold tests over their heads about how much have you memorized and you can regurgitate. But in the end, we're dealing with two bigger problems. One is what it's like for kids in these schools. Watch the joy. Now, that teacher was told that you should have an interactive classroom, so he kicked up his instructional strategies. Anyone? Anyone? And now he's doing that instead of just stand and deliver thing, he's moved it up in a little bit. Now, this is obviously a spoof on what that might look like, but if you were to take any kind of surveys or testing, what is the percentage of kids who think of the work as meaningful and interesting in school? It varies from 17 to 20%. And I don't know how to educate kids for a world that's becoming like this when they are coming that bored. And it doesn't matter if we said, thou shalt remember these 12 things because I'm the adult and I know it's on the state test and you better get this thing. It's about how disengaged our kids are becoming. What's our national dropout rate percent? It's now 36%. And 9 out of 10 of those kids have passing grades when they leave. What's the number one reason for kids leaving our schools? Bored. Bored, bored, bored. And that joy level is being sucked out of all of us, including people who are the classroom teachers who are saying, this isn't really what I want to do, but you know, I'm trying to be part of the team and try to make things happen. And I actually believe there's an and here. You don't have to choose between politicians and or choose between the kids. But I'm just saying, we've got very big things to do in our schools. And part of that big thing is dealing with the information explosion. How many of you have heard that we're having one? How many feel you're living in it? Okay. Do you know what information anxiety is? You could say, I know what that piece is. How often does information double? Now, who paid somebody to do that research? I have no clue. But let's just say generically they know what they're talking about. They're saying every 18 months, the whole thing about the internet is the volume of stuff that's intersecting and being contributed. 80% of our scientists are alive and well in the internet today, sharing and swapping search, which is why we're getting physics and biology mixing and matching together and creating new things. So if we were to take that metaphor, I'd like you to find your piece of paper. It is not pink, it is white. And this is an activity that I would like for you to take back and have with your communities, not just your teacher communities, but your local communities of parents and senior citizens, because this is a dilemma that does not just belong to the school district. This is a dilemma that says our economic viability, our capacity to take care of us as citizens, is about making sure that the precious time we have in school is being lasered towards what is most possible. And there is no way that you're going to make some of the changes be under consideration without engaging them. So this is one of my key activities I do in community meetings. You're going to take that piece of paper and fold it the long way in half, and then in half a second time, in half a third time, and I think this thing squeaks, so let me see if I can get out of this. Okay. And finally, in half a fourth time. So you have a little itty-bitty piece of paper that's folded this many times. Four times in half. And yes, you can thank me for it not being cardstock. Now, this is going to be a metaphor for us to be getting our minds around this concept of information explosion and what that means for our schools. It represents the amount of information known and available when a kindergartner enters our school system. And somewhere in there is the concept that we would know what they needed to know for their careers or their ability to survive in the world, and we've divided all that up and down to those 6 minutes of information. And in fact, time passed so slowly that we could live for generations without very much new coming into our lives. In 1890, they actually requested that the patent office close because they thought everything that had been invented had already been invented. I mean, it's like, aren't we done with inventions at this point? So it's the whole concept that life passed so slow that not much new happens. And we are now living proof in this generation that it's possible for our kids to know more than we do. That is not true of what they may have thought they knew more than we did, but it's really not true in past generations. The way they were to be successful was for us to pass off our knowledge and wisdom and guide them on how to be successful. My grandpa raised us on a family farm, and his grandpa taught him how to farm, and he taught my dad how to farm. And I will never forget the day that my grandpa turned his horses in for a John Deere tractor, and he put his harnesses away, and every Saturday for the rest of his life, he oiled those harnesses. I watched my grandfather live through that transition and grieve the rest of his life for that way of life and those horses. But we have this hallucination that we've now got it organized. So I'm going to have you open it up. 2 years go by and they're in second grade. Now we have twice the amount of information known and available. And anybody in here want to place a bet on whether one little thing has changed? Not much. And maybe some things have been purchased or not, but we're still hanging in those textbooks. So I'm going to have you open it up one more time, and we've got that child in fourth grade. This is the amount of information known and available in the world. And we probably haven't even begun the textbook review, but we live in a world in which those books are made. It takes 4 or 5 years for them to gather up the information, sort through them, get them through the editing process, then a year to get them out to you so that you have a year to decide, and then you have 5 to 7 years to be living with that stuff or more if the budgets don't come. So you only get to know what was known way back then in your book. But okay, that's how it works. So we're going to open it up one more time, and now we're in sixth grade, all those incredible hormone years. And the information is doubling and doubling. One issue of the New York Times has as much information in it as a Renaissance person had to know in their lifetime. The class of 2000 was exposed to more information in their senior year The class of 2000 was exposed, and I use that word, to more information than their senior year than their grandparents had to know in their lifetime. And still we wonder, is much different in what we do in the classroom, what we teach, and we don't seem to have a compost pile. Everything comes in, but nothing seems to be organized in terms of what comes out. You just run out of time, do the best you can, and now we have an incredible organizer. If you don't have time to teach everything, what do you teach? The test. If you don't have time to teach everything, I'm sorry, that's what it looks like nationally. And people are like, like this. But so it goes on, and we do want our kids to stay there. We do our best, and they are still attending. They can't legally drop out anyway, and now we're in our eighth grade. What's known and available in our eighth grade. By the time you start in the fall and get to the spring, every content area has 33% more information available every year to teach that they may or may not be covering. The textbooks got so big and heavy that California had to make a law about how heavy they could be, because they just kept making the chapters be bigger and more information. Those other people. So here we are in eighth grade, and some of these kids are starting to say, I'm dying in here in terms of interest and joy. I will please my parents. In fact, we have a number of kids who are doing really well in school who hate school, who talk about how much they hate it. I ran into a group of kids at a drugstore the other day. They were seniors, and they were like AP kids, and they said, oh my God, today I would rather have watched paint dry on a wall than to listen to Mr. So-and-so. I thought, there's a metaphor. She said, I only have, and she had been down by the hours left and clicking, you know, to stay there. And they said, well, why do you stay there? She goes, oh, my parents like it that I go to school, and I'm just supposed to put up with this until I can have my real life. I'm not saying every child is there, but I'm not saying we're asking where they're really at. We still want them to stay in school whether the legal age gets here or not. So now you have to find a collaborative partner to play this game. And I would like to find one person to join me to represent getting to 10th grade, the amount of information known and available. So I need someone to be willing. This is where you pause and they say, are you kidding? Thank you. Come on up with your piece of paper. Do you have one?
With a piece of paper?
Yeah, she's willing to share. And I'm going to be watching to see if you're participating. All right, open it all the way up. We're in 10th grade now, and those SAT scores are starting to sort of ramp up in people's consciousness. How many of you know that the SAT score has no research or findings that show us anything about whether kids will be successful in school, stay in school, have a career in life? And it's okay to have that test, but the amount of anxiety and resources built around that as if that stamps your intelligence is bizarre. And we all play that game as if it's a real signal. And I'm watching your face and everybody go, yeah, I know that. But we're still playing that game. And why are we doing that to our kids? And some of them get labeled that they're not that smart because of that SAT score. And it's like, that is a linguistic outcome. Nothing to do with the other intelligences. And follow this, there, I think it's out of Pittsburgh, a professor who is developing a rainbow test, and it comes from Daniel Pink's book on why right-brainers will rule the future. And I've got that book up here in just a minute. But this test tests the future skills of what kids know, and it's been found to be 30% better indicator of whether kids will do well in college. And one of the activities is four cartoons in which they have to create a humorous caption to go with the cartoon. It's one of the activities. Rainbow, it's a rainbow test, and I'll get it for you. So your name is Pat. Thank you for playing this game. And Pat and I are going to represent what grade? Did you check? Thanks. We're in 10th grade, and this is the amount of information known and available in the year, and we have people in classes starting to give more and more homework to kids because they know the year is short. So they're giving homework over their holidays. We even have AP teachers in some districts, not to be named, who give them four or five books to read before they start school so it can be ready. We don't even do that in our colleges. But we're talking the Beowulf and the Iliad, and we're talking some pretty heavy material. And I was just wondering how those teachers would feel when they say, well, if those kids are so bright they can learn this without you, why would they even show up for their AP class? I'm just wondering about that. And we have open source universities being developed with CurWikis, and MIT has, I think, 1,400 courses free and available worldwide for people to learn without paying them any money. I'm in a university right now, right? Okay, so I'm just saying, you know, we're going there, and this is like, what are we doing with the time, and what are the strategies people are using, because they're feeling this, and yet the beat goes on, because we want to get them to our senior year. I need two more people willing to play. And Pat, will you notice how many people are and are not participating? You need to be linked up four people now to represent the amount of information known and available. Thank you. I'm going to take these two people. Get your four people ready over there. Get four more people ready over in your group. This is my information known and available in our senior year, and whether kids go on to school or not, we are looking at a world in which they're not always going to have a teacher that says, here's the two chapters, here's the three problems, and all we're learning today is adjectives. Next week we'll learn adverbs. They're not going to have that person standing around when they go to work says, excuse me, but what is my five-paragraph essay you want me to use for the corporate report? Is the topic sentence always go at the beginning? I mean, these kids have got to have more neurons and independent learning and self-learning in a world like this. But it doesn't matter. The beat goes on because we need to at least get them somewhere. So whether they go to college or not, I need four more people. Did you find those people? You need to be standing up and patched in. Eight people to represent the amount of information known and available in the world when you reach your sophomore year in college. Or your 2 years in community, or let's say you don't even go there. When I left college, I was expected to have enough training to last me about 15 years solid. And then I might get a little obsolete, but they aren't going to let go of me because I have tenure. And I can be cranky because you're supposed to respect your elders. But we all know that when you were hired for what you knew in the moment, and the support for you to be learning, robust learning, is really not there in the school calendar or the school budget for any of us when you leave those school institutions. 75% of what we know today, what didn't exist 20 years ago. And I'm not talking about the technologies, I'm talking about the brain research and the modalities of learning. Let's get together because we have to be a little more collaborative than this. Okay. Whatever happens here, again, is that indicator of the SAT. We don't even have surveys that say, how well did we prepare our kids in terms of their ability to wrap up their desires of what they want to do and be able to know. We get them out of school and say they all checked in for their first day of college, and we're done with that job. Whether we like it or not, we need eight more. Do you see anybody participating? We need eight more people. Thank you. They're back there. We need eight people to represent getting to our college year. Somebody do the counting. I got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 right here. This is our senior year in college. How many of you have heard that electrical engineers, by the time they reach their senior year, half of what they learned in college is obsolete already? Now, if we used the Father Guido method, we'd only pay for what we learned. So you should be getting some of your money back, folks. And not only that, but when we think about the jobs, how many of you think of software engineering as a kind of a brainy job? That software, writing code, and I do. Bless those people who do that stuff. Or any number of those things about engineers. Right now, China is graduating 350,000 engineers a year. Software engineering we can buy for, let me get this right, about $7,000 a year, paying people in overseas to do that compared to $60,000 or $70,000 here. And an accountant in the Philippines earns $300 a month compared to about $4,000 to $6,000 a month here in the United States. And that $300 a month goes against the annual income of being $500 a year. In that country. And then you take your top engineers getting $15,000 a year in India compared to, say, $70,000 here in the stateside, and that $15,000 represents 25 times more money than their local neighborhood people make. GE out-resources 48% of their software coding today, and they expect that to be only the tip of the iceberg. Now, this is not to create a threat. This is saying, wait, all those skills that we thought were so solid, and if you would just go to college and get educated and learn that stuff that the teachers tell you to learn, you're going to be out there, standing out there in the field, as my grandpa says, with or without that bull chasing you. Now, I'd like to say that this is the end, but we would need this many more people to get us 2 years out of that college degree. IEY, no matter where you're working or where you're at, if you are not keeping on the cutting edge of what you need to know and be able to do, as doctors, as pilots, as whoever we are, you're going to have to be struggling with staying in a marketplace. And let me ask you to turn to a neighbor and say, what's two top things that you would need to know or be able to do to not just survive, but to thrive in a world in which information is doubling and doubling like this? Whether you're a teacher, whether you're a student, what is your best hope of what they really need to know? So turn to someone. You guys are going to talk to us. What's two things they're going to need to know to thrive in a world that is doubling like this? We have to talk faster. Okay, wait a minute. It's 9:15. I have to talk faster, so stop talking and stop learning. When I do this in community meetings, we slow down with flip charts, turn them into groups, and saying, what are those skills that we need? What are the skills that we are holding in schools? And what are a whole bunch of things we better be putting in there? Well, you can start to look that collaboration is going to be important. Not because I have to like you or like you. I don't care about you. But I have to get along with you well enough that your world and what you know is available and at the table as part of our think tanks. And I have to be able to take the world I know and understand and communicate it effectively. I've been hanging out with Lori King. A few of you know her. She's very shy girl. But she's willing to share. So I feel like, Lori, I can't cover all the bases. Catch me up on a whole bunch of stuff here. So I get like sort of my little renewal things and vice versa, I hope. But you're not going to be able to make it in this world unless diversity is king at the table, because like-minded people will never get us out of the boxes. Invention. And by the way, is all this information credible, useful, reliable? One of the top 10 sites on Martin Luther King is run by racists who package who he and what he is to sort of slur the impressions of him. And the ICT thing, which is the information communication technologies, which is not about can you turn the computer on, but how is your thinking skills and communication skills, saying one of the top deficits our kids have today is knowing credible and reliable sources. Now, there's something to think about instead of what's the new doodah. And if you're going to get a smart board in, you're going to be doing what? You're now going to do your presentations, and you're still going to do what you always did in the classroom, but now you have a smart board. That doesn't make us smarter, folks. We've got to shift our questioning strategies. We've got to target some instructional outcome. We've got to go beyond integrating, which means using this stuff. We have things to do in this world. I don't know what things you are doing now, but I'm going to ask you to kick up the passion and saying, it is time to stop waiting for people to be in the mood to use this stuff. And to be so breathless about PowerPoints as the end thing that we want kids to be able to do. We've got companies banning PowerPoints today. Not because they're bored with them, and they are, but because it's being demonstrated that it causes thin thinking and thin communication, and actually is one of the examples, was at the center of the Apollo explosion blow-up, because the PowerPoint presentation put the information such sound bites that they couldn't package the big picture together to make a decision that would have saved that mission. And Edward Tufte says PowerPoint is evil. Now I think that's a little strong. But he did get your attention with that title. So I want you to clap for the people who did participate, but here's what's going to happen to the people who are not participating in this, is you're going to be left out with what only you know. And that ain't going to be enough, folks, in the world that we're traveling in. So thank you very much. And here, Pat, your piece of paper. What most people identify is this thing called 21st century skills, and the concept that our literacies are changing. Images communicate 66,000 times more information than text does. We have to have bigger globs of information coming in and being useful. And here's the book I was talking to you about. It's really very interesting. Its first three chapters are, and we're going to use this as a foundation for our AP experience this summer, is that the left side of the brain, which has been honored and nurtured and revered and tested, is going to have to find a companion, because the future belongs to the right-sided brain. The artists, the designers, the storytellers, the people who, in fact, the premier leadership today is intuitiveness and playfulness. that they're doing studies that the leader who knows how to let his people laugh and can help to create that laughter, it turns out, joy is an energy, a very positive energy that makes more things happen. Well, don't get comfortable, because I know you were. And maybe they lied and it's going to double every 2 weeks instead of 72 hours. But we haven't even begun to see the glut of stuff out there. Some good, some irrelevant, some obsolete, and some outflat just lies. So I'm wondering what stops us from doing something like making efficient, credible, and reliable searching to be a number one target zone of what we do with our stuff. I don't know what a one-to-one initiative is, except we're going to go shopping. And when you have that in the headline, it tells people it's about the stuff. It's like a bumper sticker. It's like a topic sentence. It's like the sign outside of a door. And I know that there are intentions behind the one-to-one initiatives, but that is not a marketing of helping people understand that we have new places to go. Because if you have the same thing, but you're just doing it differently with more expensive stuff, we're not going to fund that forever. And I do think we have places to go. There is something called information sickness, and I had it. Went to counseling for it, but I got over it. I started highlighting books and tabbing them and making 3x5 cards so that I could remember them on the plane. And I got this kind of anxiety. And that anxiety is an awareness of what you don't know. And it turns out that if you only know this much information, the circumference of that line is your awareness of what you don't know. And if I double what you know today, I make a circumference of that of what you don't know. So the more that you know and learn, the more awareness you have of what you don't know. And we're going to have to settle into that and have external tools like thumb drives and hard drive to help us work through this and be the meta-organizer of all that stuff as opposed to the hard drive itself for these tests. So again, I'm watching time. I'm trying to figure out what comes out, so let me see what I did here. Oh, this is a BFO. That's the blinding flash of the obvious. Understanding cannot be memorized. Because in information sickness, we're talking about, this is Richard Werman's work, data rich, information thin, and wisdom poor. And wisdom is our ability to take this information and do something with and do ongoing learning and be fearless learners. And it turns out that understanding has to be practiced. So when you hear people talk about constructivism and giving time to be in project-based learning, you're hearing people have that dialogue that says, where are our kids going to practice being able to have those kinds of rich and thick skills? If whatever you're doing today, whatever that is getting you the results, you can't get new results by having new technologies. You actually have to change 30 to 50% of the content or instructional strategies. This comes from the New School for Improvement by Beverly Joyce, Joyce and Shower's work. And Cambridge says that IT is so different that 50 to 75% of the strategies have to be changed. And what I see is a lot of promises that you won't have to do anything different. You just have to decorate your lesson with technology and you're going to get some benefits. And we have gone way past that concept. So I don't know all the ways that you're going to begin to imagine and envision what you do with this. And I have to have a little ocean water here to take people off the ceiling. We have work to do, and you can feel my urgency that we not waste it with accelerated readers, and we not waste it with training kids one more time with PowerPoint. And here is a very big snag in our buildings. And again, because I'm sort of thinking about this, that ocean can get loud, sorry. That I'm thinking about, when you put a book report on paper, and then you put it in PowerPoint, and then you put it on the web, and then you make a movie of it, have you changed the intellectual work at all? And why do we get more and more pleased that kids have movieized their work? So we begin to look at some things about what does integration mean, and at this time integration means anything that you do with technology is integrating. And yet I would say to you, all technology uses are not equal. And you have in your handout, and I will have more discussion with this in my third session when we talk about craftsmanship, the whole idea that these words are misguiding people to think that as long as I touch it and use it, I have done my duty and I have done my job. And we're going to need something more than one-to-one initiatives and integrating and enhancing to get there, because I don't know what those things mean except you've used technology in some fashion. If you will peer past the stories that people tell about their integration, the ones that they think, wow, this was really fun and great and useful, I'm going to ask, what do you like about that story, other than the fact that they use this stuff, and is there anything that concerns you about that story? And we looked at three stories last night. But basically what they're doing is saying, in telling our stories, you are telling people what you think was worth the time and dime to do that. And I have no idea what's coming up now, but I'm sure it's going to be interesting. Oh, here we go. This is a sheep in the woods being chased by a wolf in the woods, and they got a grant. And so they bought some stuff. They just went shopping. And you want to be careful of grants, and I'm not saying don't advocate for those grants, but grants are always, under those circumstances, short term. There are moments in time in which you build something that people, that is worth doing, and people understand it, and they value it. And if they don't get what it is, and they don't value it, they shouldn't be funding it. And we're now getting a lot of national studies that say for 12, 15, 20 years, we've been buying and using this stuff. What do we have now that we didn't have before? And we have to start urgently asking that question. One of the things I'm doing is the digital storytelling of having teachers tell their stories about that work to help get the word out beyond data. But we're never going to be there if we let everyone do their own willy-nilly things. Use it, don't use it, use it well. And so the three categories that I'm going to have you look at is literacy, adapting, and transforming. And this is not a time to practice, but a time to sort of introduce the idea. Are you telling technology stories? Were you telling PowerPoint and hardware stories? I use the smart board. We're buying smart boards. We're getting smart with our smart boards, because all I hear is tech stories in there. Now, there are likely to be stories behind there, but if you did have a smart board, what would be happening for kids? Well, they would be using it. I know, but if they're using it, what would be happening that didn't happen before? What's the new cultures, the added value that you're rolling in? People saying, we're now podcasting. I don't get what that is. I mean, I understand podcasting. I have podcasts. But a podcast is a mode of communication. It's saying, I'm hammering today. Well, no, you're either building a birdhouse or a bench. You're doing something. You're having some outcome. So just telling our technology stories, talking technology stories, shopping for technology, and I would say stop the buying until everybody understands what they want to have happen with it if they did have it. And we got plenty of things we need to have happen. Adapting is that next story that says, look, we don't really have anything new, but, you know, people like it. It's the sheep in the woods being chased and the wolf in the woods. And they're doing the same things, they just have new tools. And that's that book report that just got a lot more expensive because we got new tools. So pausing just a moment with our good ideas before we implement them, when looking at transforming, you'll see that that quality shows up with 21st century skills. And one of the best ways that I can describe adapting and transforming is that in adapting, it's not only just optional, but this is our information consumer category. This is a category that says kids are doing summary reports, because their job as a consumer of information is to tell me back the thing, the topic I gave them, tell me about that topic well enough that I know that you got it. Hi, David. So, adapting is information consumption. It's the first three levels of Bloom's. Transforming is higher order thinking that says go beyond the existing information that you're asking them, taking their interests and their tools and their thinking, and says, don't just sit there like a tape recorder. Do something with this stuff. Here's some fun things. How about asking a social studies class just a quick morning question, who would Caesar have as his five faves? And why? That would be an interesting question. Who's Caesar? Who were his friends? Who were his best friends? Would he have Marcus Anthony on there, et tu, Brute? I mean, do you think Marcus would be on there? And there'd be a lot of discussions just with that one thing. Here's another thing. How many of you think of spreadsheets in the English classroom? Not usually, some people. I saw a great activity on Lord of the Flies in which every chapter they had to map the power of Jack versus Ralph. Where was their power in the chapter? And they had to do a little journal entry, a little blogging on it. And then at the end, they had to present their line draft. Very fascinating to see several students who kind of worked by themselves. In chapter 7, almost everyone identified Ralph and Jack being equal in power. What the heck happened in chapter 7? I haven't read that book for so long. I went back and reread that chapter, and I'm not telling you. But this is no big, long, hairy, 7-week project-based thing. It's about saying, do something with the information, make meaning out of it, push the questions another place, and by the way, that the products that they develop are useful and beneficial to others. So here's this information consumption and information producers. We know this. We want them to do more than chew on what we give them. We want them to make and conjure up something new and what that inventiveness looks like. And I'm also going to be inviting you to immediately, as soon as possible, starting yesterday, start to think about student work as your body of evidence. It doesn't lie. And I see that we have posters of celebrations of things that they had created, but you could have artifact fairs in which teachers bring examples of their digital work. And they have conversations. This is not show and tell, and this is not who won the best prize for best actor and actress. This is about saying, what did you see, what did you hear, and what advice would you give yourself to lift up the quality of what happened next time? And please, big sign, no more summary reports with our digital products. We got plenty of that with paper and pencil. Go out to ThinkQuest and look at how many of those are summary reports. Go out to WebQuest and look at how many of those tasks are summary reports. Now, that isn't about those two things not being good. It's about the questions that you ask, one of the most important technologies that you can have. And here is another BFO. I've given you how many today, BFOs? Oh, you're not counting? Okay. When I code the workshop titles in your school district as literacy, adapting, or transforming, the bulk of titles I'm seeing is learn PowerPoint, learn podcasting, learn blogging. It's talking about the stuff. And the big surprise is that when we did walkthroughs in the buildings and we collected student products, that the pattern was almost identical to the workshop titles. So if you gave me the artifact of your workshop titles in your district, I could probably write you a fantasy technology audit plan, and I'd be pretty close without a lot of details. I've done 2,300 school districts technology audits and plans and worked with them, and the patterns are the same. When you leave it optional, when you use words like, we'll be enhancing, and we'll be enriching, and we'll be integrating, it means whatever. And we've got more places to go. So I'm going to do this in my student workshop, but this is a, do you know what the product is, software? You can list these as literacy, adapting, or transforming products.
Cool. I think I'm going to be a cook now.
This product as literacy, adapting, or transforming. That's the training that I'm working with people now, saying, what are you seeing? And we'd like to be in front of the teacher spending time on this. Literacy, adapting, or transforming. What do you think? Well, what's the product they're using? Claymation. How many minutes do you think they spent on that? Mm-hmm. And what type of communication is it? Biography, compare and contrast, handling, you know, probably a short story, right? When you spend that many hours to get a short story and it's tipped with that much learning curve in the technology, it has to be about literacy. learning this stuff. This is one of the best I've ever seen. I love it. I'd show it and I'd play it and everybody laughs. So I am not against that, but this isn't a pull-out computer class in which they have the time to just do the technical part. But if you're going to spend that much time on a product, you've got a literacy product. And that's neither good nor bad, but there it is. So we have a lot of products like that sitting out there. This is an 11th grade Emily Dickinson's class. What would you say is the cognitive task of that? Low, medium, or high? Almost not on the chart, because she took an Emily Dickinson poem and read it and put it on a PowerPoint slideshow, and now the teacher has integrated across the curriculum. Now that teacher can do more and that student can do more, but it was about what was the task. So I do have this book out there, but you can go out online at my Digitales website. The scoring guides are out there, but you cannot get the scoring guides to score unless you know one very important thing. It's free, by the way, totally free, but you can't get in unless you know the password. The password is, what type of communication have you created? And websites and PowerPoints and podcasts is not a type of communication, it's a mode. A radio show is a mode of communication. And you're going to know, are they docudramas? Are they summary reports? Please don't do any summary reports. Please. Do something else. Let the summary reports stay in the paper and pencil land. You can do book reports and push the question and have them do public service announcements for book reports, or have them do a compare and contrast of the characters. I mean, push the question somewhere else. And we now have this category of participatory, which is that users contribute content. And when we discovered this 9 years ago, people were saying, what are you talking about? Now we got blogs, we've got wikis, we've got all the social networking tools. It is all kids think about is those participatory products that they develop. If you know the type of communication, you can focus on scoring the content even more and making sure that it's robust. These are the modes of communication, and we want kids to be facile in lots of them, and I will specifically go into this in my digital storytelling thing. So given that, I was like, I've given you several things to be thinking about today, and I don't know if you're willing to change or not, whether your schools are willing to change or not, but I say you be the people that can make it happen, because here you are today asking the big questions, being part of the session. I've only seen 5 people leave. I'm hoping it's a bathroom break. We have storms rolling over us about economic viability. Kids who are leaving school, and maybe your kids are staying in school, but those kids who are staying in school are going to have those other kids on their economic backs if we don't figure this out. I think we have work to do, and we need to not be so breathless about so little. And having said that, no matter what you believe or don't believe, it does happen. There's a tipping point. And I want us to engage in it in a way that says, we know how, and I'm going to use this word from now on, we know how to wow people with what we can do. I love the title of your conference. And here's the thing that says, and the angel said, if we fail this time, it will be a failure of our imaginations. And it turns out in order to do this shifting in our schools, in order to transform what is possible, we'll actually have to use 21st century skills ourselves to make that happen. It's a great irony, and it's a great privilege to serve our kids that way. And then, you want to go out to a BYU because they got a lot of these. She gently put the future and the world back in their hands with utter belief that people are capable and willing, and together they can make that happen. So here's what I know about integration. It is not about using it. It is about targeting something much more specific that you think will be useful and valuable, and the stuff by itself will not bring these promises. So organize your staff developments, organize your goals, organize your training to be more than about the stuff, but about instructional strategies. You have this incredible learning space to write on for kids. Technology is so unknown that people are going to be willing to follow you into shaping it any way you want to. How many were here last night with the JLL theory? You got jelly, you got to pick your mold, set it up, and make sure you've got that right shape going. And I'm going to leave you with my special word. It's on my business card. Da Umje Chino. It's called Get Attitude. I know the realities. I know the budget realities. I know the culture realities. I know the 40-minute class periods. I don't care. We got to make it happen anyway. Daumje Chinho is a Portuguese word that says there is always a way. No is the wrong answer. And when you have passion for making it happen, this is something I know is communities can make it happen. Daumje Chinho is about ours declaring that even if you don't know how to send your kid to college, and even if you don't know how to pay for it to happen, got to happen anyway. So you start with the answer and how to make this happen is yes, we are going to make it happen. I have down on the table some my business cards with this slogan on it, Daumje Chinho, Get Attitude. And this is about not your personal willpower, but about saying, I'm going to step up to leaving a legacy and being part of taking my knowledge there. So thank you. I know that in all the ways possible, you're going to move from good to great. There's a 3x5 card that says, what advice do you have to yourself for moving things forward, and will you leave it with somebody at the door? And thank you for your day. I have 2 more sessions, and there are so many good things to be here. Be sure to listen in.